With Star News, this is Francesca Vaghi. I am here with Patrick O'Hare. We're going to talk to him today. Accompanying me is Alexander Jones. Hi. So how are you today, Patrick?
I'm not too bad. Thanks for having us. Nice to see you guys in the Star Studio. I'm back up here.
Not a problem at all. To start off on a vague general note, can you tell us what you think your biggest achievement has been so far?
Biggest achievement for this year? It's really hard to try and pin it down to one thing. Like one of the things we've tried to do is a kind of a cultural change, I suppose, in the union, where we've had a greater engagement in democracy and politics amongst the student body. And I think that we've tried to take the lead on that and make the example. So, you know, through things like, you know, internationalism and twinning with a student association in Egypt, which I'm sure we might talk about later, where it's things like driving forward the debate on the NUS. These are things that have came up towards the latter end of the term. But I suppose the engagement with politics as a whole over the semester and with democracy has been proven or has been, you know, supported by the figures, for example, in the elections. So, you know, managing to transform the turnout in the rectorial election where I was managing that and getting that up to the 49% mark, and that's then carried on to the 52% mark as well. They're the kind of things that reverberate in the student body, which are real markers. And so that was the highest percentage of turnout in a student election in the UK. And hopefully that reflects on some of the ways that through the SRC we've really put political issues, topical political issues of the day on the agenda in our meetings and made judgment calls on them. So whether that's on cuts in fees, whether it's on equal marriage, whether it's on, you know, different international issues and so on, international solidarity, we're engaging with politics and we're hoping that that reverberates in the student body, and I'm sure it has left a legacy.
And on the same note, do you think there's anything that you haven't achieved that you hoped to have achieved in?
Well, I suppose actually it's kind of over the same question as well. I mean, you know, we've both got my manifesto in front of me here, so I'm waiting for it to get some issues pulled out of it. But there's particular ideas which I tried to drive forward and just weren't possible. So things like the bike rental scheme, where I tried to get that going at the beginning of the semester. For that, I really needed the support of certain parts of the university. That wasn't forthcoming for various reasons, and it just wasn't possible to go ahead with that. And I think it's a sign of maturity when you say, OK, I'm spending a lot of time in this. It's just not going to happen, unfortunately. Let's focus on some of the other issues there. But I suppose as a whole, instead of a particular project, one of the things which is, you know, a bit of a long game, and, you know, we haven't managed to do it as much as I would have liked this year, and it's partly to do with, you know, how much time I've had as well, has been to have mass participation of the student body, not only in elections, but also in campaigns and meetings coming along. And things. So there's issues like that where I really would have liked to have a more participative democracy and not as much a representative one. So when it's issues around affordability or whether we're having SRC meetings and having students turn out and coming along to that and things like that as well, or if we're having a week about sexual health or a week about accommodation, being able to get big teams of people to get involved and get passionate about it. And I think that was the success there was fairly limited, and I'd hope that's something that can be improved upon next year and in the future.
I know one of the things you regard as being one of your biggest successes is the link with Cairo and the Egyptian University. Could you maybe tell us a bit about how that came about?
Absolutely. So during my campaign, election campaign, that was one of the things, one of my pledges, which was most popular across the different candidates as well. A few of them said, oh, that if we were elected, we'd like to do something like that as well. It's a great idea. And so, in fairness, after the bike scheme never came off, I was like, right, I need to make sure this Egypt link does come off. So I actually went over there after trying to sort things out by email. I decided to go over there in January myself, you know, as you know, obviously all paid for by myself and things like that, more of a kind of a private trip, but with the interests of the union and this link at the centre of it. So there I managed to meet up with different student unionists from Ain Shams and American University of Cairo and various others. Spent a good amount of effort there with, you know, a translator and things as well, and then brought back the proposal to twin with Ain Shams University, thinking that that's one of the ones. It's a popular university, it's a state university, it's one that's played a big role in the revolution, it's one that needs a lot of support. And although it's very different from St Andrews in terms of its size and its scope, we thought it was one that would be very important to twin with and make the links with. So obviously, as you know, the culmination of that, not the culmination, but perhaps the culmination for this year was the trip over from the Egyptian delegation, which toured around the UK. But it's taken quite a lot of work behind the scenes logistically to bring that all together. And with a few minor hiccups, I think it went extremely well. And I'm quite proud that this is something that we could put St Andrews at the forefront of in terms of international solidarity.
And what does this link practically mean for the university going forward?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's more to do with the union rather than the university. The university has, say, academic links through Arabic with American University of Cairo and things like that. So at the moment, the university won't have links with Ain Shams, but the union will. And so I suppose moving forward, we've already seen in the last few days the ways that we've managed to get issues from Egypt on the agenda and to help support those students, even if it's in limited ways. So the students here have gone back to very difficult situation, violence on the doorstep of their campus. Their university president has been killed in a car crash. And we're able to then publicise that, put out information, and hopefully in the future as well, when there are instances of violence, we can have awareness campaigns on campus, and we can have days of solidarity or vigils for students who are affected by that. But of course, it goes beyond the Egyptian revolution and the politics of it and, you know, what's happening in Egypt at the moment and politically. It's really about helping to build up their student union. Because in the past, that's been something that's been co-opted by state security. The students haven't trusted it. They haven't had participation from students. Whereas what we have here at St Andrews, again, beyond the politics, we have mermaids, we have debates, we have STAR, we have so many, we have filmmaking, volunteering charities, so many more, and all on the SSC, where we do get so many students involved in it. And that's something they really want to learn from. So my suggestion for taking things forward, and I'd like to go out there myself in the summer, but, you know, I won't be president anymore, but my suggestion for taking things forward will be to send out these people who are good at fundraising, who are good at debates, you know, who know about radio, who know about TV, and really bring their experience out there so that they can share it. And, you know, they'd also get to experience the Arab and Egyptian hospitality when they're out there as well, as I hope they've experienced hospitality when they've been in Scotland.
Besides the points you just mentioned, why did you think this particular university needed this link?
You kind of had to pin down which university we would work with or which student union in Egypt. American University of Cairo was one where we have an academic link. And it's a small university, it's similar size to St Andrews, it's also quite elite. So in some ways it made sense to make a link with them. However, it's not an Egyptian university technically, it's an American private university in Egypt. So although the students there were very involved in the revolution and their student union as well, I thought it was more important to twin with an actual Egyptian university and that the link should be through that. And I think that, you know, as a state university as well, they do need more support than the American University of Cairo. And I was actually a little bit worried about in the future, if you make a link with American University of Cairo, it may start off as being, okay, let's support the revolution or let's support this. But it's a university where the elite go in Egypt. And so I didn't really want an elite link. Elite academically, sure, but not elite as in social class. And I was slightly worried that that's what it might become if that was one of the ones that we twinned with instead.
Okay, we can maybe now take a look at some of the things that are in your manifesto that haven't quite managed to happen. And there's a section here entitled Beyond Academics.
Yes.
And the three points that you make are about the university gym not being large enough, about the University of St Andrews not having a swimming pool, and about wanting to see a space set aside in the university for painting and sculpture.
Yeah.
How well have you delivered on this section?
Well, I think these are all things that will hopefully happen in the longer term. So that, it's a realisation when you do go in, like myself, with a manifesto with a lot of ideas in there, and I think it's very important to set the bar high. I think it's important to set yourself a lot of challenges. Otherwise, if you go in there without a huge amount to do or setting yourself many challenges throughout the year, you might find that the year actually pans out and, you know, what have you actually done? So I much prefer to set a challenging agenda and then see how much we can deliver on each point. And you realise that you're only a human, actually, and maybe, you know, there's quite a lot in there that, will, you know, you need a lot of cooperation with. So, for example, the swimming pool, etc., one of the things you realise as you come in at the union is that a lot of that, actually, the pressure there is taken up by the AU and the athletic union president. And that's time that they have to spend on sports issues. And you don't want to be treading on people's toes either. Nevertheless, you know, throughout I've supported Andrew Hall and others, and in university meetings and prioritising sport as something which is going to be key for the future and that the university is very keen to invest in, as well as investing in the student association. So we're all very hopeful about this swimming pool. I was under no illusions that I was going to bring one about this year. I don't think I ever said that. but it was something that I was going to work towards and pressure towards. The issue of the space in the gym is something that I've certainly carried on raising with the sports centre, but again, I think that's something more for Andrew Holt to take up. Now, there is a massive investment in redevelopment of sport planned for the next coming years. The point about the art space, that's something that we have built into the plans for the Student Association redevelopment, which weren't there before, so that there is now an assigned space for an art workshop within the Student Association redevelopment, which will be taken forward in the next few years.
With hindsight, would you have made those exact same pledges now? And is there anything in particular in this section of the manifesto, but maybe more broadly, that you, now knowing exactly what is possible in the job, would not have put in?
Well, I don't think I was pledging to deliver a swimming pool over the course of this year. I think maybe there's a, you know, there could be a selective reading of that particular issue. I don't think this is a book of that, you know, the manifesto isn't a book of pledges. It's things that I'll be trying to work towards. So I think, you know, it says there the university gym is not big enough to cater for the student body and needs to be extended. Well, that's not a pledge that I'm going to extend it. I mean, I think that's something that I'm, you know, I'm commenting on and I'm looking to try and improve. But things like, for example, the cycle scheme, although I tried to get it done, I mean, you realise there you really need buy-in a little bit from the university. And what I tried to do in terms of, say, library opening hours and others as well, was contact people in the university before. These aren't, you know, pledges that were picked out of the sky. These were things which I contacted people in the university to see, is there scope for this happening? And none of them were, you know, were shot down. So library opening hours did manage to come about, where I had initial positive noises about the bike scheme, that, you know, that actually in the end didn't turn out to be practical. So no, I don't really regret, you know, setting the bar quite high and setting the ambitions quite high for this year. And I have to say, there are other things which are not in the manifesto, which I did manage to bring about this year, such as the link with the trade unions. And the link, the partnership there, which is the first of its kind in Scotland. So hopefully for a few of the ones which didn't make it through, there are others which have compensated for that.
On the link with the trade unions, was that something you had always intended to do but hadn't made it to the manifesto, or was that a more spontaneous thing that happened when you were in office?
It was more something that was spontaneous, and or it was something that, you know, the idea which grew throughout the semester as I became more aware that there wasn't a support network there for students who had difficulties in local employment and in their jobs. And we could do very little in the union to support them. We have an accommodation advocate. We don't have an employment advocate here working in the union. We don't have someone. You've got a career centre to find your job, but once you're in that job and if you've been treated badly, or you're not aware of your rights, you don't have any support there from the union or elsewhere or probably from the university either. So it was just actually a very good coincidence of someone in the GMB trade union who's new in the job, who's looking to do something similar and partner with a university, a student union, and myself, who also was supportive of the idea of making that link and extending representation into the workplace, because that's what that scheme's all about, really. And for example, Drew from GMB was up the other day doing a surgery for all students. They don't have to be GMB members. He's doing a surgery for all students who are in employment, who have any difficulties, or who'd like to find out more about their rights in the law. You know, and that's another thing that I'm, you know, I'm quite proud of bringing in this year.
Another area that you mentioned is a library fit for purpose. Now, as I'm sure you're aware, speaking to students, this is something that people still feel there's a lot of work to be done on. And one of the pledges, if you want to refer to it as that, is to introduce 24-hour opening times during the exam period. Why did that particular pledge not manage to be successful?
Well, I mean, I didn't particularly say that it was a, I mean, I wasn't saying it was a pledge, but maybe, you know, that's like, that's your wording on it. But with, I mean, that was something that the library was supportive of the 24-hour of the 24-hour opening during exam period. So I think that's something that there's definite scope to take it forward next year, next semester. I mean, part of it's about how much it's being used, you know, and how much the late opening hours which they offered were sufficient for the later hours during the exam period. Now, to be sure, I think the library has been overcrowded during exams, but it's not necessarily been overcrowded past 2 a.m. So, you know, there's little point in introducing 24-hour library access if there's not the demand for it there, and if the stats don't show the demand. I'm not saying that is the case. I am saying that there hasn't been a huge amount of students who have approached me to say that we should have 24-hour library opening hours during exams. I do know that Amanda Litherland, who's ran for director of representation, elected director of representation, that was one of her things that she wants to drive forward in the coming year, and hopefully she can be successful with that.
Right. Just going back a bit upon your point of introducing, you know, involvement, student involvement.
Yeah.
Why do you think that has been hard? I, for instance, sometimes think that there's a lot of apathy amongst the students here. But from your perspective, what is it that is missing? Mm. Why is there so little student involvement?
Well, I think you need to put things in perspective. I think students are involved in certain areas and very passionately so. So they're involved in volunteering, they're involved in charities, you know, they're involved in media. There's been a huge media explosion this year as well. So the students here are, of course, very involved. They're passionate, they're participative. And even let's put things a little bit in perspective. St Andrews students aren't particularly different from students elsewhere. It's not a case of St Andrews students being more apathetic or not. And I think if you look, for example, at, I know participation isn't in politics, and student politics isn't only measured by demonstrations, and you know, and that's not the only element of campaigning. But when there was a demonstration in November down to London to protest against privatisation of universities and against the fee levels, St Andrews sent the second biggest delegation from Scotland after Edinburgh. So the Glasgow unis couldn't get their act together to send one bus down to London, and we actually had some other people from other universities coming on our bus and taking them down. So that kind of thing's noted at a national level. And, you know, just by the way, actually half of those, or the biggest nationality on that bus, were American students. So the idea that international students maybe don't participate in things like that, you know, I don't really support that at all. I think they can be just as involved. But it's always a challenge. And, you know, students, you always have to make politics relevant in their lives. So you need to say this isn't something separate. This isn't party politics. This isn't something that only comes up at an election. This is how much you pay in halls of residence. This is, you know, the kind of student experience that you're having. This is how much you pay in fees. This is how many class hours you're getting. So the more you make those issues relevant and particular and really on the ground for students, the more I think you'll get them involved. But it is a long-term process, but it's really a challenge for us, those that are in student politics, those that do try and inspire students, those who gain their trust through elections, to really put that case forward. So I'd never write off young people or students and say, you know, they're just apathetic, you're never going to get them involved. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's just a challenge to us. You know, I'd much rather accept that we haven't done good enough or we haven't been strong enough in getting them involved than writing them off and saying they're not interested.
Fair enough. And also about the SRSC communication, I think that was one of the really big problems that you had this year. How do you think that the next SABs can overcome this issue?
Well, what precisely do you mean by the SRC communication?
Well, I don't know. For instance, I was trying to look up the minutes on the website, and I think the latest ones are from
the 21st of February.
Yeah, mm. So...
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the job to put up the minutes and, you know, for example, of the SRC should be with the chair of the SRC. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be a question for them to answer, really. Although, of course, I would accept some share of the responsibility as the president of the SRC as well. Communication has been an issue in the sense that, you know, I think that, for example, the social media could have been used more effectively. You get caught in a bit of a vicious circle, I suppose, where you're not having a huge amount of hits, say, to your website. The design and the framework of the website isn't great. So you start to then use alternative media sources, you know, and we're very thankful to like see yourself star in the way you kind of report on what's happened in the SRC and others. But once you build up a following, or others do, like The Stand or like The Saint Online and things like that, then you actually think, well, how are students going to get access to this? How many are? Wouldn't it be just quicker if we go to the media rather than putting it up, say, on our own website and things like that, and which is quite difficult to navigate.
Right.
So, I definitely accept. And one of the proposals we've looked for is actually, how do we get someone in the union who's in charge of communication? Because
yep.
That's really a bit of an issue. You know, ostensibly, I'm the person who deals with the press. Nevertheless, I've also this year had the biggest... clearly the biggest sort of spread of activities and responsibilities of any sabbatical. I've had most of the director of representation responsibilities from last year passed over to me. So that's environment and ethics and sustainability. That's, you know, inherent in community. It's equal opportunities and welfare and many more. So with such a bright sort of, and one of the things we've tried to do and recommend for next year is to actually cut back on the amount of things the president has to do so that he can focus on them and make sure that they're better. But somebody needs to take responsibility in the union for communication. Now, you could have a new SAB. You could have it built into the job of the DOSDA. You could have actual support from someone like Ian Couples, who works in the union. But we have a limited amount of time and hours. And so I think that's something, you know, it's recommended for next year in terms of an improvement. However, communication in terms of with the student body and direct communication from at least the president, and I'd say other sabbaticals as well, I would say has been greatly improved. And I think if you go into the student body and you ask whether myself I've been someone who's been a present force or you know, a presence in the community, in the student community, and that people know who I am and that I'm approachable and that, you know, I do go along to different student events and things like that, and I'm in the student community, I'm not in an office wearing a tie or seeming like some kind of university management figure. And I think that there has been a change there, and it's a deliberate change which I've tried to effect following on from certain weaknesses or perceived weaknesses from the sabbaticals from last year. So I think if you are going to say there's been a weakness in certain types of communication,
yes. No,
I'd say in others, yes, there's definitely been an improvement.
I think we're going to have to wrap it up soon, Alexander.
Yeah, if we just take a look maybe at one final area, yes, which I'm sure listeners will want to hear about, which is accommodation.
Okay.
And one of the big issues of this election campaign that's been fought by the incoming SABs was making affordable accommodation. Is that not a damning indictment of your own attempts to sort that out?
Absolutely not. Accommodation isn't... improving accommodation isn't something that can be changed in a year, or improving the affordability of accommodation. Now, I've been a campaigner for affordable accommodation since my first year, and it's been a priority since I've been in office. And let me just mention some of the things that I've done in order to improve that situation. The first launch of a rent freeze, an idea which, you know, didn't take off to a large degree, but it's been done for the first time, and it's something that can be built upon. We've got some landlords to sign up to a rent freeze. We had an accommodation week for the first time, where we gave information out about accommodation, had issues about affordability, about homelessness, etc. In terms of the deal that we managed to agree with the university, instead of just last year, there was £50,000 of accommodation bursaries taken directly from a cut in services in terms of bedding and washing and cleaning in rooms. We've managed to get £75,000 in an agreement with the university, coming new money, that's new money coming in from the rent, to go into accommodation bursaries, ring-fenced all the income from the rents to go into improvements and maintenance of the resident systems. And we've also managed to work more and have better relationships with the private sector. Now, I think that definitely has to be improved upon for next year. But another thing I would mention, just as a last thing, what we have managed to do and work towards is assuring the future of Albany and Fife Park. And that's something I've been pressing in internal university committees, and I'm very happy with the university response on that. And that's something which was in, I believe, the manifesto, and which we've continued to pressure and push for. So, you know, I hope that the other incoming sabbaticals in the following years will put as much focus on affordable accommodation as I have, and I hope that they have success. But I'm certainly pleased, you know, with what we've managed to achieve, but there's a lot more to be done on affordable accommodation.
Okay, Patrick, thank you very much. Finally,
NUS,
do we just want to take a look at actually your future? What are you doing now when you're leaving here? What can we expect to be seeing you doing in 20 years' time?
In 20 years' time? I'm not sure. I'm going down to Cambridge to do a master's and a PhD. So that's what I'll be. I'm doing another 4 years down there for the next few years. So I'll definitely miss Scotland, but it'll be good to return to my books and return to academia. And for the moment, try and prioritise and look for a career in academia and social anthropology. But I'm sure I'll make an appearance back in politics sooner or later, whether it's at a student level or a national level. So definitely something I'm passionate about. And I'll carry on campaigning, because the whole point of running for president wasn't for the sake of it. It was a it wasn't an end in itself, but it was a continuation of fighting for a fairer deal for students and a fairer world. And I'll continue doing that whether I'm in elected office or not.
Well, thank you very much, and all the best.
Thanks, guys. All the best. Cheers.
Thank you.